to bring in Mike Shannon, and not the Mike Shannon, the broadcaster from the Cardinals. Get up, get up, get up. Not him, but this is Mike Shannon, the author. And he did a book about former Giant, and that is George Foster, who went on to tremendous, tremendous fame with the Cincinnati Reds. It's The Rise of a Slugger and the End of an Era. The name of the book is George Foster and the 1977 Reds. It is by Mike Shannon. He's a co-founder and editor-in-chief of Spitball Magazine, author of more than 20 baseball books. He lives in Walton, Kentucky. I've enjoyed chatting with him on the phone. And, Mike, nice to have you on the show.
Hey, Marty, good to hear from you again.
Yeah, it's great having you on. And George Foster is one of my favorites. And for Giant fans, and you'll go back a little bit in his history, he was a San Francisco Giant, went on to have tremendous, tremendous seasons that you'll talk about with the Reds and your analysis of it. But take us back in this book, why the book on George Foster, and give us a little bit of his early history.
Well, as you know, Marty, George was born and raised in Alabama, and he had no father in his family, and he was very shy and really wasn't even around white people very much. So when his mother moved the family out to California to try to provide a better life for him, George was really very, very shy and withdrawn, and he had a little trouble, you know, mixing in. The funny thing is, he wound up playing Little League Baseball with Dave Kingman, believe it or not. And, you know, everybody knows who Kingman was. He also wound up playing for the Giants and several other teams. And so he and Foster had a relationship that went way back. But George's dream, like mine and a lot of other kids, was to play alongside Willie Mays. Willie was his favorite player, as he was mine when I was growing up. But George's dream came true, and he wound up playing in the same outfield, although briefly, with Willie Mays, and he also played with Bobby, the original Bonds, Bobby Bonds, who had also a great influence on him early in his life. And the funny thing is, you know, when George was traded to the Reds, he was crushed. He thought it was the worst thing that had ever happened to him. He didn't realize it, but it was the best break of his life because, as you know, he wound up playing for two World Series champions with the Reds in 75 and 76, and he was really a very important part of those two teams. As a matter of fact, you could easily make the argument that the Reds would never have won either one of those World Championships without George Foster. And he's been really sort of the forgotten man, even in Cincinnati. In Cincinnati, the people speak of the Big Four. That's Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, and Johnny Bench. Yeah, and Foster's kind of the odd man out, but he was very, very instrumental to the Reds' success in the 70s, and his season in 77, of course, really set him apart, and it was not just the highlight of his career, but it was the greatest season probably any batter turned in for two decades. A lot of people don't realize that the only person to hit as many as 50 home runs in one season was George Foster for two entire decades. Nobody did it in the whole 1970s and 1980s other than George Foster. So that kind of puts his accomplishment, 52 home runs, 149 RBIs, and a .320 batting average, that kind of puts that performance into perspective. And it really was a great season.
Well, how did the baseball world, and Mike Shannon is with us, George Foster in the 1977 Reds, the book, it's a McFarland book, David up in Montclair at the Book Tree can get it for anybody. It's really a good read. I like your early history of George and describing the kind of guy he was. How did the baseball world look at George Foster during the big Red Machine years, as far as you say, MVP voting and all that?
Well, you know, Foster had a little trouble with the media. Not that he was a bad guy, just the opposite. He was very humble and as cooperative as any major league player's ever been. George is a very sincere guy, and he's a Christian, and he wants to help everybody. He'll do anything for anybody, but occasionally he sort of put his foot in his mouth, and he really got himself into some fixes. And I think thinking 75 maybe, when Joe Morgan won the MVP award. George said something like, somebody asked him what he thought about it, and he said, well, I should have won the award. And as soon as the words came out of his mouth, he realized it was a dumb thing to say, and he didn't really mean it. And of course, he apologized to Joe Morgan. Maybe it was 76. Those sort of things, you know, he did a couple of times in his career, and they really were not characteristic of Foster, because he's a genuinely nice person who really cares about everybody else, but he wasn't as glib and as polished of a speaker as those other guys were. And I think he felt a little overshadowed by them. They were, you know, Rose and Morgan and Bench, they were big kidders and they were good talkers. They were great with the media. And George, being so sort of shy and humble, he sort of sat back and watched how those guys operated. And I think sometimes he wanted to be more like them. And it cost him a few times, you know, when he said something that was much more controversial than he meant it to be. Matter of fact, at the very opening of his great season, 1977, a reporter with Sport Magazine had interviewed him, and the article came out right as the season opened, and it made George sick when the magazine hit the newsstands and he started reading it, because it contained some controversial statements like, you know, the Reds didn't want him to bat cleanup because he was a black man, and they wanted a white man like Johnny Bench to bat cleanup and get all the RBIs. And again, he said he was misquoted. Who knows if he actually said it exactly like that? It could, his remarks could have been misinterpreted, but it created a brief firestorm, and it quickly went away. I mean, Sparky Anderson said, "Well, you know, anybody that thinks that I would do something like that would pick a player, play a player, or put him in a certain place in the batting order because of the color of the skin. They don't know me." And it quickly, that sort of thing quickly, you know, calmed down. And then George let his bat do his talking, which was really his strength. Once in a while, though, he would say something funny. One time they asked him about the black bat that he was using, because that was a rare thing back then. Everybody was using a white, you know, an ash-colored Louisville Slugger. And George said, "Well, I'm just trying to integrate the batting rack, you know."
I've had him on in spring training, and we've had a lot of fun talking, and I always see him down there, George Foster. So I enjoy talking with him. But it's interesting what you say, because we do have interesting conversations, very glib, very candid conversations. And Raph and I are going to have to go in the archives and pull out one of our George Foster interviews from spring training. Mike Shannon, the book is George Foster and the 77 Reds. As a wrap-up to this, Mike, where does Foster end up in baseball history, being the slugger of 50 home runs? Where does it end up for him?
Well, I would like to say that he has a chance to get elected into the Hall of Fame, you know, by a veterans committee, but I really don't think that's going to happen. The standards for admission to the Hall of Fame have really changed over the years, and this is something I get into because, again, Marty, as I know you know, Hack Wilson did hold the record for home runs in one season in the National League with 56. And as Foster, you know, went through the season, I mean, people started to notice that and wonder if George was going to beat the record. At one, halfway through the season, he was ahead of Hack Wilson's pace, but he kind of tailed off a little bit and came up a few home runs short of Hack Wilson's record of 56. But if you compare their two careers now, you would say, well, gee, George Foster should be in the Hall of Fame ahead of Hack Wilson.
Yeah, different world, 1930, where they jacked up the baseball. Everybody hit 300. But, yeah, George, you know, there's a lot of home runs, a lot of history. And I'm glad you did the book, because he was a little bit of a forgotten character. But when you look at the Reds in the 70s and then he went to the Mets, he is a baseball story. And I'm happy to know him. I really am. And, Mike, I love the book. And as I say, it's McFarland Publishing. And we could get it up at the Book Tree in Montclair. So it's a pleasure having you on, and I'm glad you chose this to do it. Any new books coming out?
Well, I'm one of those guys that always looks for the next baseball book project to do, and I'm looking for one now. And maybe I shouldn't even mention this, but I think there's a book on Jim Maloney. He's a California guy.
It's so funny you said that. Let me tell you, yesterday was Orlando. Well, we celebrate Orlando Cepeda's 82nd birthday yesterday, and it'll actually be Monday. But we did had a little party for him last night, and I interviewed him about his career, and we talked about his whole career. Philippe Alou was there, and we got to pitchers in the 60s. And Maloney's name was mentioned by Felipe and by Orlando. And what Felipe said was when they knew Maloney was pitching, the whole training room was filled up with right-handed hitters.
And, I can believe that.
And if you're ever going to do a book on Maloney, talk to Philippe Alou.
I will.
Yeah, very good. I appreciate having you on, and congratulations on the book and Spitball Magazine and all that. We'd love to have you on again and chat with you. You're very good on the air.
Anytime, Marty.
All right, thank you. That is Mike Shannon, George Foster, and the 1977 Reds.